Welcome back. Looking to turn the page on that leaked video of Mitt Romney saying that 47% of Americans see themselves as victims, dependent on the government, and not paying income taxes, the Romney campaign has turned the focus on an Obama tape from 14 years ago in which then-State Senator Barack Obama talks about finding ways to, quote, structure government programs that pool resources and hence facilitate some redistribution to give everybody a fair shot. Here's Mitt Romney on Fox News talking about that tape.
We believe in free people and free enterprise, not redistribution. The right course for America is to create growth, create wealth, not to redistribute wealth.
It's actually, of course, part of the debate over taxes. Very simply put, raise them on the very wealthy, as Democrats propose, or cut them while shrinking loopholes, as the Romney-Ryan plan proposes, which will create economic growth. David Leonhardt, Washington bureau chief for the New York Times, has been charting the numbers. In fact, we're going to have a link to his article and his graph at hereandnow.org as we welcome David from his office. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
And for those who haven't seen it, your graph looks like Mount Everest, you know, climbing up one side, falling down the other. We start at about 2.5% growth in the economy in the 1990s. Not bad growth. And then George H.W. Bush, the first President Bush, raises taxes. So what happens? Describe what you see on this Mount Everest.
Well, so we had fairly good growth in the late 80s, and then we have George H.W. Bush raised taxes in 1990, and Bill Clinton raised taxes significantly further in 1993, and that was the Clinton move in particular was greeted by all kinds of predictions of economic gloom. Larry Kudlow said it would throw a wet blanket on the economy. Newt Gingrich said different things. And then what we actually had in the late 90s was the fastest economic growth and best income growth in 30 years.
To keep with the Mount Everest, so this is the left side of Mount Everest. It starts climbing under George H.W. Bush, and it just climbs and climbs and climbs to this peak in the Clinton administration. Now, it starts to fall down the other side, but it's still growth. It's still, pretty high up.
Right. So it starts. So we peak at a five-year average of annual growth above 4%. And then we get the tech bubble bursts, and we get a recession, and then we get the 2001 and 2003 Bush tax cuts. And the 2001 and 2003 Bush tax cuts are greeted by the flip side of the predictions that the Clinton tax increases were greeted by. We had all kinds of predictions from advisors to the president, from people in Congress, including Paul Ryan, that this would lead to really high levels of prosperity, much better economic growth. And instead, what we get is we get an expansion in the last decade, the 2001, the decade that starts in 2000 or 2001, depending where you want to cut it, that is really mediocre. Even in 2007, this is the statistic I find most remarkable, even in 2007, before the financial crisis begins, the decade is on pace to have the slowest annual average economic growth since World War II. Well, and then, of course, we have a financial crisis that, to use your mountain metaphor, sends us, you know, way down to essentially below sea level, to, you know, to growth right around zero, even over a five-year period. And so I think what's important to grapple with here is I'm not suggesting, and I'm not aware of anyone who is suggesting, that the Clinton tax increase has led to great economic growth or the Bush tax cuts led to poor economic growth. But they didn't prevent them from happening. And so that should really give you some pause about the notion that the most important policy for economic growth are changes in top tax rates at the level that we're now at. We're not still up at 70.
Well, hold on a second, because you're saying, you know, you're not suggesting that, but you could come away from looking at this Mount Everest with on the right-hand side of Mount Everest, as you said, it just plunges to sea level. You could say, wow, look at that. Raising taxes, as George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton did, that increases growth. And then on the other side, tax cuts, that slows growth.
You certainly could, just looking at that. But I think when you took into account things like the popping of the housing bubble, the popping of the tech bubble, the price of gas, all kinds of other things, I think it would not be a very I would not find it to be a very persuasive argument to argue that the Clinton tax increases were the dominant cause of the 90s boom, or the Bush tax cuts were the dominant cause, or even a significant cause of the huge slowdown.
Well, in fact, this is what Paul Ryan said to you when you brought this graph to him before he became a vice presidential candidate. But you brought it to him, and he kind of laughed, and he said, correlation isn't causation. he made a defense, and you say you hear this from conservatives who pushed for the tax cuts. He says if not for the tax cuts under the George Bush era, things would have been worse.
Right. And I don't know that we know that. I don't know that we know that without the tax cuts, things would have been worse. I think if you want to make the argument that correlation is not causation and that the Clinton tax increases didn't cause the boom and the Bush tax cuts didn't cause either the mediocre growth of the Bush years or the financial crisis, I think you can make a very strong argument. I think where you end up on much, much weaker ground is trying to argue that tax cuts are the main thing that drives economic growth. The whole history of the last 20 years, and to some extent even beyond that, argues that tax cuts are not the main force that drives economic growth at the tax rates we're at.
Well, and you give a reason. You say some of the people who actually were the architects of the tax cuts are now not saying what they said back then. You know, back then everyone said, oh, it'll be trickle down. And this is what Mitt Romney is saying today. It'll put money in people's pockets. Now they're sort of softening that. People like Donald Marin, a former Bush administration official, saying, as you've said, now they really aren't, you know, they're good, but they're not, you know, all powerful. And you say that one of the problems with the thinking that tax cuts will put money in people's pockets, make them work harder, is that in fact tax cuts may lead to some people working less.
Yeah, I mean, tax cuts bring all kinds of cross currents. So on the one hand, a cut in marginal tax rates allow you to keep more of the next dollar you earn. You could completely imagine why that would give you incentive to work more. Or maybe if you're out of the labor force, it would give you more incentive to come into the labor force. On the flip side, if you are someone who targets your income, if you say, hey, I really care about making $40,000 this year if you're a cab driver, or I really care about making $1 million this year, in a weird way, a cut in tax rates could actually cause you to work less hard. A cut in tax rates also causes the deficit to go up, which causes other economic problems. And so there are cross currents with tax cuts. And I think there are a lot of people for whom the rate of taxes are not what's actually driving their ultimate economic decisions. And that's why, when you look over history, I think other forces have a much stronger role in driving economic growth than modest changes in tax rates.
David Leonhardt, Washington Bureau Chief for the New York Times. By the way, you mentioned in the column that has this Mount Everest graph of tax cuts and increases that you're going to have a future column where you're going to tackle where President Obama has gone wrong in the economy. We will have you back to talk about that. David, thanks as always.
I look forward to it.
Back in a minute. Here and now.